You're listening to Jonathan Shepherd on Tory Radio.
In the second of our series of interviews for Tory Radio, it's my great pleasure to be here today with Greg Clark, Member of Parliament for Tunbridge Wells. Greg, thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule today.
It's a great pleasure, John.
Having taken a look at what I think is your extremely impressive biography, a couple of points stood out for me. You've been described as the brains behind Conservative policy for many years, referring, I think, to your time in charge of policy and also research at Central Office. And perhaps what I think is a little unkindly, you've been described as the classic backroom boy. So what made you want to come out of the backroom and become an MP, which is very much in the public eye?
Well, the only point of being in the backroom is to work on things that you hope will change the country and change it for the better. And right from the time when I was a special advisor in the last Conservative government, I worked for Ian Lang when he was Trade and Industry Secretary. And doing that job convinced me that actually, if you really want to make a difference, if you have ideas that you want to put into effect, you've got to roll up your sleeves and argue for them and be there in public. And just being there in the background, I think, is no substitute for taking the battle out and fighting it that way.
I assume, again from reading your biography, that you had a part to play in drawing up the 2005 manifesto, which has received a certain amount of criticism, including claims after the election that perhaps it was too reactionary and right-wing. Do you think that criticism is actually justified?
I think to a certain extent it is, Jonathan. Looking back, you work on a set of policies that you expect to intend to put into effect in government, and the election manifesto and the campaign is a selection of those, and you choose to highlight certain ones rather than others. And I think, with the benefit of hindsight, I was part of the team that put it together, so I'm certainly not excusing myself from this, but with the benefit of hindsight, I think to have concentrated so much on things like immigration struck the wrong note. I think it wasn't top of people's lists of concerns about the country. I think there are other ones. I think what a Conservative election manifesto must do is really strike a chord with the people as being in touch with their concerns and dealing with them. And I think the concerns that people had on the doorstep at the time of the last election were concerns about the fabric of society, these sort of issues. And I don't think we went into them enough, and I think we chose to talk about some of the things that may have been sort of top of the pops in the focus groups, but actually they didn't go under the skin of what people were worrying about.
Michael Howard had 18 months to prepare for an election, and his decision to stand down as leader took quite a few people by surprise. In your view, what legacy, if any, do you think Michael has left the Conservative Party?
Well, I think the election campaign was very effectively run organisationally, and that's very important going forward. You can't, I think, fight an election campaign now and hope to win it unless you're absolutely disciplined, unless everyone is drilled to work for the same result. And I think Michael was very effective in doing that.
Well, you'll be pleased to know that Michael's also agreed to be on Tory Radio, so I'll hope to put that question to him as well. We had the leadership election, which seems quite a long time ago now. You backed David Davis. What qualities did you feel that he had that would make a good leader?
Well, I worked with David quite closely when he was party chairman and I was director of policy. And I've always been quite impressed that he's a man that knows what he wants to do, has a clear sense of an agenda. I think it's very important to have an agenda. And in seeing him and working with him at close quarters, I was persuaded that he would make a good Prime Minister.
I believe today it's David Cameron's 100th day as leader. As someone who's been involved in Conservative politics, certainly for many years, how do you feel things are going? And do you also think, have there been any failures?
Well, I think it's gone really well. And I say that as someone that didn't vote for David Cameron, voted for David Davis. But I think he hasn't really put a foot wrong so far. And I'm particularly impressed because one of the reasons that I backed David Davis rather than David Cameron is that I worried a bit that the length of time that David Cameron had been in Parliament, I just worried that it was this long enough to have formed a clear view as to what you want to do, so that you wouldn't be blown off course when difficulties arise. But actually, I think since he's been elected, he's demonstrated a very clear view of what he wants to do. He's got a very clear project, update the party to change to win. That's what he said he would do. That's what he's doing. And yeah, there were some ups and downs during the leadership campaign when he was put under some pressure. He didn't buckle under it. Quite the opposite. I think he rose to the occasion there. So I think he has done extremely well. I think we're in very good shape.
If you look at the great Conservative Home website run by Tim Montgomery...
It's a very good site.
You will see that some people are saying that given the problems that Labour are facing and that Tony Blair's facing, we should be further ahead in the polls now. Are they right?
Well, of course, it'd be fantastic to be streets ahead in the polls, but I think we've got to understand the project in hand. People didn't trust the Conservative Party, and it's essential that people can see us as a government, a prospective government that they can trust. Now, you and I know, Jonathan, that you don't trust someone because of their behaviour over a period of days or weeks. Almost the definition of trust is that it's built up over a period of time. And an important part of that is consistency. So I think over the last 3 months, we have set out a new message, very much an updated message. I think we've got to stick to that through thick and thin. We've got to be consistent there. And if we do that, if we can achieve that consistency, then 4 years down the road, people then might turn to us and say, well, actually, we can trust them because they have done what they said that they would. But 3 months into it, I think, is too early to expect people to trust us.
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think what you're saying is we're in it for the long haul. You've recently been appointed to look at welfare reform as part of the Social Justice Commission, and you're also on the Public Accounts Committee. I wondered if you could tell our listeners something about what these two very different roles involve and some of the things that you're working on at the moment.
Well, first of all, welfare reform. I mean, this is an area in which Labour promised right at the beginning that they would think the unthinkable on. They appointed Frank Field to do that. They gave up after a couple of years. And yet we have a situation in which there are far too many people in our country who live in poverty, economic and social, for year after year after year without any real prospect of getting out of that and improving themselves. It needs to be our issue. Now, David Cameron has said that we need to be the party of social justice, and a big part of that is that we need to show that we can be the people who can help people out of poverty, and I'm absolutely certain we can do that. So that's really exciting to be able to work on the policies that will not only help people get out of poverty, but re-establish the Conservative Party as the party that can do that. Now, the Public Accounts Committee is a wonderful committee to serve on as an opposition MP. Being in opposition has its frustrations, of course, in the chamber when you lose most votes, although we've been winning some recently. But the good thing about the Public Accounts Committee is that it's non-party political, but you really get the chance to scrutinise and perhaps even interrogate the people who are responsible for billions of pounds worth of spending to expose situations in which that money's being wasted. Often, I'm afraid, it is.
I think you're right that there is a certain amount of government waste that needs to be highlighted. On to something a bit more topical. Last night, Tony Blair got his education plans through Parliament with the help of Conservative MPs. Do you believe the policy of helping Labour get through its legislative plans is right?
Well, I don't think we should see it as helping Labour get through its plans. I think we need to be responsible and, as you were saying before, look to the long term and ask ourselves, what do we want to do for our schools? And I think we absolutely have to give them greater freedoms, give them greater flexibilities, make sure that they can offer the best type of education that head teachers think that their children need. Now, does this bill advance that? Yes, I think it does. So we should back it. It certainly has its flaws, but I think on balance it's an improvement, and for that reason we should back it. And I think the fact that it causes discomfort for Labour is an incidental and no doubt nice to have, but that shouldn't be our purpose. Our purpose should be to back things that would improve education.
Not wanting to plug, well, actually I do quite like plugging Tim Montgomery's site. David Cameron's done an article today about his first 100 days, and I believe in it he mentions a bit about sort of people being cynical about politics. Recently there's been a lot of publicity about honours for loans. What's your view about the funding of political parties? Do you believe there should be reform, and should there be a limit on loans, and should they be made public?
Well, certainly, the idea that you should be able to buy yourself a place in the legislature is so obviously appalling that must encourage people to think cynically of politics, and I think we all suffer from that. I think it's very difficult. I'm instinctively against the state funding political parties, because I think what will come with that is then rules as to what it could be spent on, no doubt sort of politically correct restrictions on what kind of advertising and what kind of campaign you could do. And I think that could be quite dangerous. On the other hand, I can see that having very large donations, especially for a party in government, clearly, even in where it's legitimate, raises suspicions that must, again, make people feel cynical about politics. So I'd be in favour of a system in which you capped donations so that there was a limit on the size of donations that you could accept. So you could take some membership subscriptions from people. And perhaps that might be a good pressure on parties, actually, to go out and recruit new members, because if their financial viability depended on the number of members rather than just the quantity that a few large donors give, then that might be quite a healthy thing for the revival of political parties.
Absolutely. Just before we go, I'd like to throw a few names at you and to see if you could perhaps describe them in hopefully one word. I'd like to kick off with...
I will try my best.
Tony Blair.
Underachieving.
William Hague.
Yorkshire. And that's, I say that as a Yorkshireman, that's a term of approval. It connotates a lot of things, but Yorkshire.
Yeah, coming from Derbyshire, I can take that. Dennis Skinner.
Prickly.
Gordon Brown.
Complacent.
David Cameron.
Future.
Well, thank you, and on behalf of Tory Radio, can I just say a big thank you for your time.
Not at all, it's a fantastic project, Jonathan, I wish you all the best with it.
Thank you.
Make sure you catch Tory Radio coming to an MP3 player near you every week. Contact us on 020 7870 8658 or email toryradio@aol.com. Get in contact now.